Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back. Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball! He drops the ball! 3 runs will score!
You gotta be peeping me! What in the hell are you doing?
Hello and welcome back to the Shoeless Goat Podcast. We're Cubs, White Sox, and MLB Podcast. I'm your host, Nick. And whoa, boy, this is going to be a short one and a good one. We got some big news as opposed to the last time we spoke. But we have the mayor of Section 509, Patrick Bovard, showing us the show me the money sign.
I don't know why my – where's my – that's my other hand. That's my – I'm mirrored.
Yes, he's on a mirrored screen.
That was really bad.
That's okay. We got big news on the north and south side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I want to start with just talking about a recap of our off season recap, which was mostly both of us complaining about the inaction of the general managers, as well as saying that the Cubs were going to miss out on Swanson, the White Sox were going to stand pat, and that at least we got one thing right, that Carlos Correa was going to sign with the Giants, but he might not pass his physical, so we could be completely wrong altogether.
Do not give Steve Cohen an inch there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He'll take a mile. All right, so I've already just like spilled the beans on just about everything, giving you the inverse. But, Pat, give me a recap of your level of excitement, what the White Sox actually did, and any thoughts about it to start off.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, number one, I think it was funny how Carlos Correa, that signing broke like literally like maybe an hour after we finished recording. So we kind of had the episode awkwardly get launched with us talking about that. Maybe we look prescient. I don't know. But these, at least the teams gave us what, 2-ish days, 3 days before they announced the signings, or they haven't been announced yet. But in any event, White Sox giving out the biggest contract in franchise history to Andrew Benintendi, which is a weird, weird thing to say. He got 5 years, $75 million as the left fielder of the present and near future for the White Sox. Beat out Grandal's 4 years, $73 million contract by two. And I think just on that note, it is very important to separate this signing, what it is, from it being the biggest contract in White Sox history, which is weird. And Andrew Benintendi being that shouldn't be the case. That being said, this is a very good signing. He is basically been an average to slightly above average hitter his whole career, brings a bat from the left side, was an all-star last year, although, you know, maybe partially because Kansas City had to have a rep. May not have the power he showed early in his career or was thought to as a prospect, but typically has hit, you know, high 200s. Last year he was over 300. A nice contact bat to add into the order. And I think, honestly, with the White Sox, the most important thing about this is the impact it's going to have on their defense, which I don't want to get too deep into the numbers, but I do have some numbers I have to show here, talk about. So I'll show you with my voice. This is outs above average if you're into StatCast. Andrew Benintendi for outfielders with at least 50 attempts last year was 87th in baseball for outfielders with zero. Perfectly average, outs above average in 2022. Generally above average going in his right or back. It was to his left where he tended to struggle. And now he's going to be in a smaller outfield in guaranteed rate field with Luis Robert, a Gold Glove winner. I mean, Benintendi was a Gold Glove winner himself a year ago, to his left. 87th doesn't sound good, but who is he replacing? And that would be Andrew Vaughn, who was 189th in baseball, dead last with negative 17 outs above average in the outfield last year. Negative 17, last in baseball. Gavin Sheets, slightly better, was 171st with negative 5. And just there were games last year after Robert got hurt where the outfield was AJ Pollock, who did not want to be there, which we established on last week's episode. So go watch that in center, and Gavin Sheets and Andrew Vaughn to his left and right. And now we have a perfectly average major league actual outfielder going to left. Like that is going to be a huge impact on defense. Like basically you just saved you got 17 more outs above average with just putting Andrew Benintendi in left instead of Andrew Vaughn.
I have thoughts because that was definitely a great data dump. Okay. so I like the signing as well. I think one, this is the Grafal effect, the first manifestation of it, getting a Kansas City Royal to come sign as a free agent. Now, I don't think that that should be a trend,
no, but maybe one or two and that's it.
Yeah. Let's stop right there. But also, I was immediately trying to think of a comp the second he signed. You already know where this is going.
Yep.
But if you look at the career statistics between him and Aaron Rowan, they're really close. I'm talking about batting on the batting side. Mm-hmm. They both have a gold glove apiece. The left field gold glove. He might have another shot at it, actually, quite frankly, in the American League. They both have one World Series ring. Who knows if that changes it with the White Sox. And they were both one-time All-Stars so far. So I guess Benintendi has a heads up. But if you end up getting an Aaron Rowan type player, are you happy as a White Sox fan?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a totally fair outcome here where this is an actual outfielder. He's 27, going to be 28. So there still could be some sort of ascension in the tank there, like in terms of his batting ability. But if that's all we get with Andrew Benintendi, that is totally fine because that is an actual major league caliber outfielder who's typically a 2-4 war player, usually an above average hitter, a competent defensive player for 5 years. Still in his prime. We're not going to have to deal with him when he's 40. We're going to have to deal with him until he's 33. And that's why I said it is very important to separate Andrew Benintendi getting $15 million, which is peanuts in 2022, and will be even more peanuts in 2027, versus it being the biggest contract in White Sox history, which is still a joke, quite frankly. But those two things separate, great signing.
I think that, last point on this, I think that it's really bizarre to say, and that's why you do make the distinction, largest contract in White Sox history and still a team-friendly deal.
Yeah. It's just, in, like I said, those two things, they have to be kept separate because I will get angry if I'm going to start bleeding emotions into each other, like logical good signing on this shoulder with Jerry not spending money on this shoulder. So I didn't think they were going to pull off the signing. They did. Credit to them. I just hope now it doesn't result in a salary dump to keep the budget in place, because that would just completely defeat the purpose of this. But for right now, I can rest happy.
And so can Cubs fans, because they did land the fourth and last remaining free agent shortstop, unless Correa finds his way back onto the market. They signed Dansby Swanson, son of Cooter Swanson, because that's very important to know. That Cooter Swanson, his father, will be in Wrigley Field stands on occasion. I love that.
Down to Cooter.
Yeah, exactly. So Cooter Swanson's son Dansby signs a 7-year 177, which is around 25 and change a year. I don't care if everybody says that this is an overpayment. I just don't. You have, again, a 28-year-old who is getting basically Javi Baez money to have a better batting average than Javi Baez, play probably more sound, just not as exciting defense as Javi Baez. And he hit a lot more homers than he did last year too. So he had 27 home runs, I think, last year. So you're paying 25 for that. You're going to get an all-star quality shortstop who is a free agent when he's 36 and not 40. If the Correa deal sticks, Correa is going to be 41 when his contract is up, and they're not going to want anything to do with him in San Francisco from years probably 37 through 41. So then you're stuck with him. That's not going to happen with Swanson. So they went out and they got the last remaining. I guess the Tom Bell was a little bit louder than we last predicted. Is he the most exciting signing? No, probably not. But you got one of them. And I think it is a huge upgrade from having Horner and Madrigal. Now you have Swanson and Horner as your second base and shortstop. There are still massive holes in this lineup, but I think this moved the needle and made them the clear second place team in the NL Central with a chance, if the Cardinals like mess up essentially, or if they get injured, to sneak a division win. If not, it puts them in strong wildcard contention. That mixed with the Jameson Taillon signing and among others, and also the Brad Boxberger signing that just occurred to shore up the bullpen a little bit too. So it's a huge move. It needed to be a huge move. And I'm really sorry to say, but a lot of those fun shortstops, Elvis Andrews will not be a Chicago Cub this year and hopefully never. But what did you think, one, when you saw that Swanson was signed, and were you dreading hearing it from a lot of your Cub fan friends?
Honestly, I feel like just given how fed up both teams were and the fact that the White Sox had gotten the Benintendi signing right before that, there wasn't a lot of like back and forth about this, at least that I saw between Cubs and Sox fans. But I guess to kind of look at this signing in a value, I mean, or in a vacuum, I think it's a good signing. Like we talked about, he's younger. You're only committed till he's 35, which really in this day and age shouldn't be that big of a deal for him. Maybe he has to move to third at some point, but that's like maybe a year at the end. It's not, you know, the last 6 years of the deal when he's a replacement level player. I think in terms of the Swanson signing, the overpay, it is what it is. That's what the market was this year. And that's just how it's going to go for a premium up the middle player, especially at his age. I think the biggest thing with him, just looking at his numbers, he shows up. The last three seasons, 60 games in 2020, he's missed two games total. He's played in 60, 160, 162. Only one season since 2017 under 130 games. I mean, if he hits around league average, which is typically what he's done most of his career, although, you know, two of the last three seasons, he's been better than that. And even if his defense regresses a little bit, that's going to be a well above average player showing up that much, which gives you, again, not much of an injury risk like you've seen with a guy like Correa, especially with his physical, whatever the hell's going on there. So overall, I mean, he may not be exactly the player he was last year, all 7 years, but it's a very good signing. Not a face of the franchise, like you said, but I think a very good player that you can basically count on to show up almost every day of the season at shortstop, which is a really hard thing to find, honestly.
Yeah, I can't stand this comp as a person, but like, he, if you're going to compare this Cubs build to the 2016, this is your Ben Zobrist. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't like Ben Zobrist, but so I hopefully Danzy Swanson is nicer to the ball boys. But in any case, yeah, this is the comp, I guess. And if he plays like him, then Cubs fans are going to be happy too. So you have basically your shortstop set for the next 5 or 6 years. Yep. And then you maybe have to move him around. I want to look at the rest of the infield and the whole field lineup, and we'll see some greatness, but we'll also see where the holes are. So starting at left field, Hap, center, you're probably going to play Bellinger, and right, you've got Seiya Suzuki. That center field is still a question mark, but you know, who knows? It's a 1 year deal. Then you have shortstop Swanson and Horner at second. First and third is where it gets a little shaky, because you got to stick Wisdom in there somewhere. He could play both. I stuck him at first, and then I stuck Christopher Burrell at third. I still think you need to make a signing so that you could play Wisdom at third, maybe have Trey Mancini at first. And then you have big problems at catcher with Yan Gomes and TJ Higgins. Miguel Amaya listed as the third catcher on the depth chart. So that's not bad. That is a wild card quality roster, I think, especially when you look at the rotation of Stroman, Taillon, Hendricks. There's rumors that Smiley is going to re-sign. So you'd have, of these five, you'd have to pick two: Smiley, Justin Steele, Hayden Wisniewski, Javier Assad, and Keegan Thompson. So I guess plug and play for those last two spots, but you also want some consistency. I could see the Cubs doing maybe a six man for a little bit too, in any case, also I had DH Madrigal, but good Lord help me if that's the case. But anyway, I think the lineup's going to be if they stand pat. I would like another complimentary signing or two, but it is what it is. And I couldn't be happier from where they are right now at this point and having not made a trade yet. So there's still the trade possibilities too. Like I said, I wouldn't hate a Kike Hernandez trade anyway, to get another infielder / utility guy as well. But that all depends on what the Red Sox do too.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing you're missing there just right off the top of the bat is just a legitimate like number one, number two starting pitcher type. You got a lot of solid starting pitchers, but that's probably the one thing where if you could like, not that I think they're going to, cause that would, all the free agents are gone. If there was one thing you could put on the team, it's probably like a Carlos Rodon type pitcher.
Yeah. And obviously he signed with the Yankees. So that's not going to happen, nor would they would. I don't think if they do get that split, if they were going to side Rodon, I probably think they don't get Swanson. And if I'm going to pick between the two, I'm going to pick the guy who's missed two games in his entire career versus a guy who gets hurt just about every year that he plays.
Except for the last two, which have been the most important for him.
That's true. Hey, that it could be that Aramis Ramirez level contract year player that everyone wishes they could be.
I mean, that was like Alex Rios once upon a time. Just always, you know, the walk year, that's the biggest one.
Oh yeah. All right, Pat, I just did it. So I'm going to ask you to do it as well. Give me like your, you know, your lineup or your, I guess, field or outfield infield rotation there.
I mean, I think it's mostly set right now, barring what they do at second base. So I'll just do everything else for there. I think catcher Yasmani Grandal is there. What he's going to be, I think, is probably him and Yoan Moncada at third. So kind of going around to this way.
Struggling with the mirror.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not.
But also, it's just bad radio when you're using hand signals. But yeah, it is.
Yeah, whatever. That's why we have a video option to watch and subscribe to.
This is true.
In any event, I think the two biggest X factors for this team, it's Yasmani Grandal and Yoan Moncada just bouncing back. I think if they can be anything close to what they were in 2021, this team is in a way better place, and I think well above Cleveland. But those two are set. Tim Anderson set at shortstop. Second base, Leury right now? Maybe Lenin Sosa if they try to go that route. This is where I would like them to sign. I don't really want Elvis Andrus at second. He's never played there, and I think the offense he showed us was a mirage. If they're going to spend money, I would say Segura. Just get the guy that's going to be a 3-win player and leave it at that. But we'll see. Maybe a trade might make more sense there. First is going to be Vaughn. Left is going to be Benintendi. Center is going to be Robert. Right probably is going to be Oscar Colas, although he is not on the 40-man right now. So I could see them maybe going and getting a right fielder. I've seen Adam Duvall's name thrown around as an option until Colas is fully ready. So he doesn't have to be the guy day one. And then DH is Aloy, where he belongs and will be safe and sound from getting hurt tracking down a routine fly ball. So most of the lineup is set. Most of the rotation is set. You're going to have Cease, Lynn, Kopech, Giolito, and then Clevinger. Pretty good rotation on paper. If especially Lynn or Cease gets hurt, you are in a lot of trouble there. That's my biggest issue with the rotation. And the bullpen should be pretty good. Assuming they don't trade Hendricks, which would be stupid, they have a pretty damn good bullpen on paper. So I don't know. The big question is just going to be, can they catch Cleveland? I still think 55% yes, 45% no. But it would not surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if they win the division by 10 games or if they crash and burn and last year was real. I don't know.
I guess we'll find out, but let's just put it this way. We're a lot happier now than we were the last time we hit these airwaves. So I'm going to conclude it right there because this was a short, update episode to our morose and defeated natures and showing us that hope reigns eternal as opening day is still very far away as a blizzard is about to hit Chicago.
That was a bummer.
Yeah, I know. Hey, we got to bring everybody back to earth, okay? So thanks for listening again. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundChicago.com, all that stuff. Or, you know, Sports on Tap. You guys know where to find it. And in any case, go Cubs, go White Sox, go MLB. And remember, Yadier Molina is not a Hall of Famer. The clock is ticking, but Wilson Contreras might be. Have a good one. Same old place, sweet home, Chicago.